It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Alex Braidwood is an assistant professor of graphic design at Iowa State University. But today we're not going to talk about visual art. We are going to talk about sound and a new way to turn scientific data into something you can hear. He is with us today. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Charity. Thanks so much for having me in.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And can you give me a little bit of background? Clearly, in reading about you and your many different experiments, you have a fascination with sound. Where does this come from?
You know, I think it honestly started early. I grew up in a really musical household. We were given instruments growing up. I played instruments all through high school and band and things like that. And when I went into my undergraduate education, I was focusing on graphic design, but this was at the time when new media, web design, things like this were starting to get really popular. And as I began working on those things, I realized that I was able to combine a lot of my interests both with the visual and with the audio if I started working with interaction design and motion design. And so throughout all of that time, I was really interested in how sound could affect experiences, whether it be something that you are watching at like an auto show or something you're interacting with on a mobile device or on the web. And you know, this idea of like working with sound as part of these experiences just has continued to build over time and has been sort of part of the evolution into the work that I'm making now.
There has been research released in recent years about urban sound and how stressful it can be to be in a noisy urban environment. And again, looking at some of your work, I get the impression that that's not your response. How do you feel about that?
Well, some of it is, you know, yes, the being in noisy environments is it does pose some very serious health risks if we aren't careful to take time to get away from it. But the thing that I'm the most sort of intrigued by when it comes to noise and urban spaces and in that line of my work is that these noises represent things that are the reason why we can have the society that we have. You know, like, it's easy to complain about a loud garbage truck going by early in the morning, but the fact that we have this, you know, garbage collection system is something that keeps us very healthy. It's very sanitary.
Let's talk about your most recent project with turning scientific data into sound. You were an artist at residence at Lake Okoboji, the ISU Lakeside Lab, this summer. Where did the idea come from to take data sets and turn them into a soundscape?
So the idea of this is called sonification, and that's a thing that exists. There's some really interesting information and writing out there about, you know, sonifying data. But where it came from in my own sort of trajectory was while being an artist in residence at the Lakeside Laboratory, which you mentioned is at on West Lake Okoboji, I went there originally to you know, sort of immerse myself in a different type of landscape than I had experienced. I was really looking forward to getting out into the prairie preserves and, you know, recording the dawn chorus, as well as, you know, just collecting different types of sounds that were going on around the lake. And right when I got there to actually like be an artist in residence was shortly after the laboratory had finished installing this buoy in the lake. And so just as I learned more about the role that this buoy was playing in the research that's going on at Lakeside Lab and met some of the people who were working with it, I just got really intrigued by this data set that's coming in and wanted to connect it to the other things that I was thinking about, because it to me became a really fascinating way to experience that environment, not just the sounds that happen if I wake up before sunrise and go out and capture the birds and the critters and the bugs in the prairie preserves, but also, you know, then manipulated and controlled based on what's actually happening within the lake.
What information are they collecting on this buoy?
So there's a whole bunch of sensors. There's a range of sensors that are above the water and a range of sensors that are below the water. So they're collecting things like air temperature, water temperature, pH levels, dissolved oxygen levels, CO2, wind direction, wind speed, things like this.
And what exactly do you do to take this data to turn it into sound? What's that process?
Sure. So the buoy is got this whole array of sensors, and it is reporting the data from those sensors up to the web every 10 minutes. So what I did was I wrote some code to go out and scrape that data, save it into a system that's on my web server. Then it converts that data into a range of numbers that can be used within a couple different pieces of music software that I work with. And then I am mapping those values to different digital synthesizers to both generate notes and also to control values.
And do you have much control over the kind of sound you'll be creating? We're going to listen here in just a moment, and it sounds underwatery and otherworldly a little bit. Was that intentional?
A little bit, yes. So I've hooked the data up to a digital synthesizer that I've created. So I've decided what sounds each sensor value is controlling, triggering, and manipulating, and also it's controlling and manipulated field recordings, so actual sounds that I set up microphones and recorded in different areas around the lake. And the way that it is set up is that against the same data set, it produces the same results. And that's one of the things that's really important about this process for me, is that it's not random. It's not generative. It's not like floating out of control, even though it sounds kind of spacey and ambient. When I run the system against the same time period of data, it sounds the same repeatedly.
All right. Well, let's listen to what you came up from. This is from a data set that was collected in June at Lake Okoboji. That's just a small sample of the sound that you generated. And you took these data sets and you created a 13-minute long piece of music that changes over time. What changes the music? How do the sounds change?
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, and that 13-minute piece represents just over 6 days worth of data. So that piece was created from the time that I built the system while I was an artist in residence until my residency ended. So that kind of represented my the sort of second half of my time being there. And what you're hearing is over the course of the longer piece, you hear it a little bit of it in that sample too, you hear things that change over a much longer time scale and you hear things that change over a shorter time scale. So there are some things that will change maybe a couple of times in an hour. There's other things that'll change over the course of, 24 hours. So you can kind of hear when a day happens, because one of the driving tones is the surface temperature of the water. So this has it changes a few degrees throughout the day as evening sets in. But then there will be other changes that you would be able to hear over an even longer time span. So over the course of multiple weeks or even the course of a season.
So and we'll play a little bit of sound from October in just a moment. But that, when I think about Lake Okoboji in June, I think about a kind of a crowded, fun place, water skiers, vacationers. Mm-hmm. That was not particularly jovial music. I would say it made me a little afraid of what's in the water. Was that intentional?
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I didn't want you to be afraid. I was actually going for relaxing. Like, I wanted it to be something that would surround you with sound. So if you put it onto, a nice speaker system in a room, or if I actually like listening to it on headphones. One of the researchers who I worked with at Okoboji, he uses it as part of a yoga practice, he told me, which I think is very fascinating. So, my intent was more to create something that people wanted to spend some time with, that could be, this sort of longer experience and, sort of represent the way we need to think about these bodies of water.
And there is a cyclical feeling to it. You mentioned you can sort of hear the beginning of the day and the end of the day as the water temperature changes. In working with the scientists who are collecting this data, are there other things they can hear? Does this help them understand their data in a different way?
You know, I think it gives them, from the conversations that I've had, a different way of experiencing it because they're experiencing so many data points at the same time. So you're hearing the results of four different sensors simultaneously over time. You can start to hear the relationships between things, when certain things go up, certain things go down, how much they're changing at different times. Graphing that stuff visually becomes very complicated. Graphing that many points of data onto a two-dimensional chart or graph becomes a lot of information that is very hard, especially for people with various levels of training, to then decipher and get any real meaning out of. So the hope is that it is useful there, but also just accessible for people who maybe have either like little or no training.
Well, before we forget what the lake in June sounds like, let's listen to a little bit of the lake in October. That's just a little bit of Lake Okoboji in October. Why does it sound different?
Well, so the temperatures are very different, and the temperature is one of the definitely one of the driving factors. And one of the main sounds that you hear different is the values that are controlling the field recording are more prominent in October. So with those higher levels, you're hearing more of the manipulated bird sounds from the prairie recordings that I made.
So it's incorporating the above water sounds into the underwater soundscape as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
What does this make you want to do next? Having used these sets of data, does this make you want to use other kind of scientific sets of data to explore different soundscapes?
Yeah, it absolutely does. One of the things I'm excited about moving forward with is this project has gotten the attention of a global network of limnologists who are intrigued by this idea of using art and science in order to develop different types of communications to different audiences. And so one of the things I'm really excited about is I've been able to connect with a couple different researchers who are monitoring buoys in different lakes and different places in the world and have been willing to share their data with me so that I can sonify that data in a similar process in order to hear not only different lakes at different times of year and different seasons, but also being able to like hear them in comparison with each other. And I'm also looking forward to hearing what the difference of this may be over the course of a couple of years because, lakes are these really diverse systems that change over, potentially long periods of time. And I've been fortunate enough to be invited back to stay involved with the Lakeside Lab. So I'm going to have a chance over the next couple summers to continue sort of, collecting and building compositions from this. And I think its potential is really broad in terms of the way it can help people connect to, different issues that are going on as we sort of generate more and more data. Big data is a huge field of study for a lot of people, and developing different ways of experiencing this data, I think, can be really, really valuable.
Absolutely. And before we run out of time, I want to ask you, with your awareness of sound, you've also tried to give other people sound experiences. And looking at your website, I saw your no isolation headphones, and that's a kind of a play on noise isolation headphones, obviously. And these headphones look very different. They have tubes that are leading up so that as you lean your head, you can hear sounds in different ways. What do people experience when they wear these headphones?
So it's a whole range of experiences. I get reported back a number of people really identify sounds that they will start hearing because they're wearing the headphones that they hadn't heard otherwise, and sometimes that's because of the material quality of the headphone. So like you described, they're not headphones like you would plug into your phone or your MP3 player. They're hearing protection earmuffs. So just the, you know, just like the plastic molded domes that go over your ears with these copper tubes leading out of them. And the role of that copper tube is it acts as a material effect on the sound. So different frequencies will resonate in different ways. It kind of limits the direction that you can hear. So normally we can hear in 360 degrees. That's just sort of part of how our ears have evolved. But these kind of narrow your field of vision to a much more strict stereo left and right feel. And the goal with them is to allow people to wear them in different situations, sometimes just, you know, naturally occurring or existing situations, sometimes audio situations that I set up. But depending on the environment, it's a very different reaction. Sometimes people will acknowledge a sound that they weren't aware of that maybe could have been designed better, which intrigues me very much as a designer, raising awareness of the sounds we put into the world. And at other times, I've had these really amazing responses where people will find it very soothing, very almost meditative is the way that some people have described it. So if you end up on my website, you can see an example of a project that I did as part of a art experiment in Ames where I took people to different pieces of infrastructure where like bridges and roads intersect and had them wearing these headphones and spending time. And you'll see them sitting and focused, sometimes with their eyes closed, really just sort of enveloped in these sounds that exist that they normally aren't paying attention to. And that's where the idea of the noise-isolation headphones come from, is instead of canceling sound out and blocking it out, acknowledging that it's there and figuring out if there's something that we can do with it, to use it in a more appropriate way, or just acknowledge that it's there as we put more things out into the world.
It sounds like you want people to listen more closely to their environment, whether they have these headphones on or not. Do you have advice for people? Is there something that most of us are missing?
You know, it's worth just stopping and focusing on your hearing. There's a couple of really great things you can do. Active listening is a practice that has a lot of great information. If you just do a search for it, you can find people like Pauline Oliveris, who was one of the real sort of initial proponents of it. But if you just stop and listen to the things that are happening, you can start to discover a whole bunch of amazing things in the world.
Alex, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me in. It was a pleasure.
Alex Braidwood is an assistant professor of graphic design at Iowa State University, but he has a passion for sound and is experiencing sound in some brand new ways and giving us opportunities to listen to things that we just couldn't listen to before. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.